Good morning. I was, when asked to give this slot, they reminded me that we're within 30 days of Pesach now. So I think this is the theme they're trying to go forward with, which makes enough sense. Shalom Vidarshan. So I wanted to discuss a little bit the issue of Mara. The mitzvah Mara originally was a mitzvah d'oraisa, as you see in the first source. V'achlus abasur b'alayah zetzli eish u'matzos al mara orim yachuhu. That when we eat the Karban Pesach, when we're supposed to eat it with matzah and mara. The general assumption, this is pretty clear in the Gemara, is that even though at one time mara was a mitzvah d'oraisa, at the time when we brought the Karban Pesach, just like the matzah was also a mitzvah d'oraisa, so was the mara. Unfortunately, for the last few millennium, we haven't brought the Karban Pesach. We are hopeful to bring it this year. But unless things change in the near future, this is a mitzvah midrabbanim. Maror, translated by Manischewitz, is bitter herbs. Can we get a little bit more exact than that? So the Gemara tells us, we start with a Mishnah, number two, the Mishnah gives us a list of the vegetables, I guess we could say, that first can be Yotzei, the mitzvah Maroth. They are b'chazeres, b'tamcha, b'charchavina, b'ulshin, uv'mara. On the list, probably the most interesting one is the fifth one, which tells us that mara is actually an example of mara. Unclear what that one means, and that wasn't that helpful. And it goes to this like the yosbem ben malachim ben yaveshim, whether it's wet or dry. Avlov kvushim lo shlukim lo mevushalim. You can't have it if it was marinated. Can't have it when it was cooked, etc. The Gemara then tells us, this is the fourth line here, Chazeres is Chasa, Ulshin is Hindavi, Tamcha is Amar Baruchana, Tamcha Shma. One of the, again, less helpful translations, Tamcha is translated as Tamcha. Thank you very much. That was Tamcha is Tamcha, right? That you get the impression of asking a guy on the street in Israel, getting an answer like this. Yes, he's Tamcha. What are these things? If I walked into Whole Foods even and I asked for these things, what would I get? So if you look at Rashi, which we give you at number three, Rashi says that chasa is lutuga, which we call chasa with a hay. Chasa is a modern Hebrew word. Chasa means lettuce. And lutuga also generally assumed to be lettuce. The other one I want to focus on is tamcha. Tamcha he calls merubia. What is the translation of these things? So there happened to be, some people mentioned it before this year. There are several fascinating articles that have been written on the topic. There are several religious botanists out there who spent their time working on this. I am not a botanist. I don't play one on TV. I don't claim to be an expert in this area. What I will do is quote from their articles as far as this is concerned. And traditionally, we assumed that chasa is a form of lettuce. This is what we generally assume to be romaine lettuce. Many people have the minug to use romaine lettuce as their mara, and that would be chasa, the first on the list. Merubia is a tricky one. People thought that merubia was horseradish. However, if you look at the articles, in case anyone really wants to do any research, a lot of people mentioned that it was a famous Gesher article back in the early 80s about this topic. If you happen to be Rabbi Gil Marks, passed away around a year ago, he wrote a very interesting piece on this, believe it or not, in the Washington Post. It's available online in 2006. Before Pesach, he was a regular contributor to the Washington Post. So there's a whole bunch of interesting back and forths that he has with some of the readers of the Post. And the mix is fascinating. Like some person will send in and say, you know, how do I make matzo balls like my bubby did? And he would explain the recipes. Then a person would write and say, by the way, is quinoa kidney? Yes. And then he'd write this long halachical response. You know, what would you say with a brisket would be the next question. And this goes back and forth. So in it, the question is about mara. And he writes a fascinating piece available in the Washington Post. It's not quite as academic and scholarly as the Gesher article, but it's much broader. The Gesher article specifically focuses on horseradish, which we'll talk about today. That whether horseradish is appropriate for mara or not. He, in fact, goes through all five of the potential forms of mara and get really going through, does in my less than professional opinion, does a wonderful job really in trying to identify them as much as possible. All of the articles are in agreement that tamcha, or what they call here merubia, is not horseradish. Merubia is whorehound. What is whorehound? I have no idea. The type of thing I'd ask twice before I ate it, probably, I imagine. But it is different than horse. Somehow along the way, right, probably around the 1500s or so, it got shifted over to being horseradish. Right? That's why a lot of people assume that merubia is horseradish, but in fact, it is not. So if we would take a look of what are the standard forms of horseradish used today, really the top two would be what we would say on the list of the Mishnah, number one and number three. Right? Number one being lettuce, chasa, right, which is known as chazeres in the... It's interesting because in modern Hebrew, chazeres is horseradish, right? That's one part of the confusion is, yes, horseradish might be one of them, but it's definitely not the one that they call horseradish nowadays. It's not chazeres. Chazeres, we assume, is chasa, we assume, is lettuce. That's one choice. And then the number three on the list is tamcha, merubia. What?
That's number two.
Oh, number two. Rashi's three.
Right, Rashi's three, yeah. Right. There's a question where you can put your hindavi in this.
Endos.
Right.
Hindavi's endos.
Right. So those are the major choices of morer, shall we say, that are popular nowadays. When the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Lacha in number four, it says, Elo yirako shiyotzen behem yidei chovaso, chazeres ol shin tamchu charchavina. Perish mini asavim marim. Doesn't get too specific. These are bitter herbs. That's what it is. And maror. Maror, interestingly, does not fall on the list at all. Right, there are four things, then there's maror. Some Rishonim are of the opinion what maror means is anything else that's bitter. Meaning that these are your top choices, but if you can't find any of these wherever you are, really any bitter herb will do. Right? Are these number one through four, these are the ones to try to get. If you can't get one through four, any types of maror will do. So this is from the Gemara. The Shulchan Aruch says that when we're talking about eating these things, you can eat the leaves, you can eat the stalks, but you can't eat the roots. Right? Right? In any one of these cases, the leaves are fine, the stalks are fine, no roots. You're not yotzei maror if you eat a root. Ella. The only difference between the leaves and the stalks is that the stalks have to be moist. What? The leaves have to be moist. Correct, thank you. But when it comes to the stalks, one way or the other. That's all from the Mishnah. If I want a half a kazayas of one and a half a kazayas of another, that's fine, I can mix much. The ikar hamitzvah b'chazeres. If you have all of these, our number one choice would be chazeres. Chazeres, which we said was romaine lettuce. That is the preferable type. V'imla'im lo chazeres, if a person doesn't have chazeres, yachzeres rishon. Then you go down the list. Right? If you can't get number one, get number two. If you can't get number two, get number three. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch says that's what you're supposed to do. That the best thing to do is chazeres. If not, you move down the list. V'yaseir she'im shnuyim. As it's written, and the Rama says, if you can't find any of these, just take something that's bitter. That'll work for you. So that's the basic background that we have for this. Over time, different minhagim developed in different parts of the world as to what type of maror would be appropriate. The Chacham Tzvi. In his Shuvas, the Chacham Tzvi was the father of Yaakov Emden, right? The Yavis is Yaakov Emden Ben Tzvi. The Javits Center is a descendant of the Chacham Tzvi. Jacob Javits is Yavits. Yavits is Yaakov Emden Tzvi. So, a little New York trivia and connection to this Shuva. So, somewhat, not exact.
It was pretty good in this.
Right. So the Zaka says, "Rabbim beinyan mitzvah sachiras mora v'isi kiyitova odia shechazeres hashoyin b'shaseinu b'roshon chachamim chasa shemitzvah lachzor ov kihu harosh v'arisha." So he says, "I want to make it clear to everybody: given the choice, you want to go out get that romaine lettuce. That is the number one option that you are aiming for. What is that? Hu yakanikra b'loshem ashkenaz salat. B'loshem sfad salata. Right? So again, you can probably guess what that means. Right? It does sound like lettuce, doesn't it? B'shem ezem hu lituga. That's the Latin word. B'chol l'shona sheshamati b'turgama v'italia v'ashkenaz v'sfad v'Portugal. B'sifrei refuas v'tevon koso latuga salat. Rainbow shum suffic and pick all of the yeshlo simanim amrum begamara sraf the fund of mechasim, etc., etc. He said this is absolutely positively the right one. Now it's interesting, among the things that they point to is the fact that there is sap in the leaves. I believe that's not true in our romaine lettuce. For some reason, the Chacham Tzvi, which goes back late 17th century, right, he lived early 18th century perhaps, right, not that long ago. Right, he says that everything, the way that their romaine lettuce looked, it's exactly the way that we would expect it, that the Gemara says. Ours doesn't really match that because it doesn't have sap in the leaves. The colors are a little bit off when Gemara explains it, etc. But he says, no problem whatsoever. That's exactly what you're supposed to be eating. Right? T'chiloso rach v'sofo kosher. It's originally soft. And you give it some time, it gets hard. T'chiloso matok v'sofo mar kalana. Originally, it is sweet, and over time it becomes very bitter. And they should ask us Ashkenaz Polanishim Karos ain't a mutzi bismana pesach. He said, why doesn't everyone use it? It's a matter of practicality. In Eastern Europe, when Pesach came around, it was still pretty cold. And you weren't able to cultivate lettuce in that time. So therefore, since they didn't have the option of it, that's the reason, not that they had a minhag not to take it. They would have loved to take it, but they just couldn't get it, those communities. Maybe the Yerokos, maybe those people in Eastern Europe didn't understand what it means. They're too far from Israel. They lost the Mesorah of what it's called. That's one. They don't know. Right? They took chrein. What's chrein? Horseradish. He says that the minhag of the Eastern European Jews was not to use romaine lettuce, but rather to use horseradish. Chehu tamcha lefidas mixas chachamim v'nafak meim churba kihim rabim ad amarich ochim afil kachati zayis machos churfe. He said, but that's terrible. A kazayis of solid horseradish
will kill you.
Will either put it will clear your sinuses for the next 6 months. Put hair in your chest and kill you. Right? Those are the three possibilities, or D, all of the above. Right? So he said that's the problem. If you're going to rely on this grain, then you tell me that harein is in fact tamcha. The problem is no one can eat it. You have to eat a kazayis. Right? Forget the chazanish kazayis. Right? Right? Forget the Noda Yehuda is doubling the size of the kazayim. Even the smallest of kazayim, a kazayis is like an olive. Let's say hypothetically. Even that's going to do you in. He said, you can't eat that. Shehu mazik b'achilas ochai. If you eat it raw, it hurts you. Mevatli mitzvahs mora, v'af acharenim al devar Hashem, v'ochen. Kezayis me'akrein, mistatim bot. And the people are so firm and they eat it anyhow. It's dangerous. Ki b'emes b'mokum shechazer shu ha'altiga salat shchiach kamo ba'arei Amsterdam v'Hamburg v'sarari Ashkenaz afshim odenu katan ma'od kona so al crane sakona v'ein bo mitzvah v'chol asher noga elokim v'ribo yekayim mitzvah ketigri v'yikta al-tuga. He said there's no mitzvah to do this. The people who are stuck in places where you can't get this, okay, so what are you going to do? You got to go for the next best thing. I don't know how good it is because no one's going to eat a kazayis, and I'm not even recommending that you eat a kazayis, he says. But really, that horseradish should be avoided, and therefore he would much rather see people eat the lettuce. That is the old minhag, he says. The Netziv, similarly in the Merom Yisadi, decides to vent a little bit about his kids, and writes as follows. He said, that which my son eats chrein, any mevid madu aronoig asma basalata. I don't understand why my son is so insistent on eating chrein for his mara. Why doesn't he eat lettuce like normal people? A little strange to air it here in the middle of the Merom Yisadi, but I guess if it made him feel better, that's okay. Right? Kedas rov achronim. Like eating swords for the body. Why in the world are you eating this stuff? Kosh Baruch Hu would never want you to do this. Right? Sounds such apparent. You haven't eaten all day yesterday, right? Now you drink a bunch of cups of wine. Now you're going to eat this stuff? I would very much like my son to please change the minute. So he takes him to a public forum. You know, the Merome Sada, and he catches about his son, etc. So you definitely have, you know, different minhagim, both from the a little bit more Sephardic side in the Chacham Tzvi, in the Netziv, from Volozhin, people speaking out against the minhag to eat horseradish.
Horseradish means what? The root of the thing?
So, but Pashas is talking about the root. Now, the issue is that we have serious problems with horseradish. One is, it's a root. Correct. Right, the Mishnah was very clear. You can have your leaves, you can have your stalks, but you can't have your root. Right, so horseradish is clearly a root. That's problem number one. Right, problem number two that people point out is horseradish isn't bitter. Right, bitter is not a synonym for miserable. Right, right.
For sharp.
Right, right. It's sharp, very sharp, but it's not bitter. It's a very different taste. Right, so a horseradish, you know, yes, you might not be happy with it, but just not being happy isn't enough. It specifically has to be a dover mar, and it's not a dover mar. Right? Also, it's based on the archaeologists of the time. Again, I can't take an opinion on this, but they point out that around Bavel, around Eretz Yisrael, at the time that the Mishnah and the Gemara was being written, there was no horseradish. Right? They couldn't possibly refer to horseradish because they didn't have horseradish. Right. So therefore, for all of these reasons, and of course the problem that was pointed out correctly by the Chacham Tzvi, eating a kezias of horseradish straight is not easy at all. So for all of these reasons, many of the Achrodim take issue with the minug, which is a very widespread minug, and in fact, of what we're eating, some could argue it's the oldest minug. That clearly for centuries we've had a masara, that tamka means horseradish. And in fact, that's the major thing what I want to discuss today, is what do we do in a case like this? On the one hand, you have a masara, a tradition, right? I'm sure many people in the sitting in this room, they remember their fathers eating horseradish.
Grinding it.
Okay. Sissy's grinding first, right? So in the house I grew up, we did not grind it.
That put real hair on the chest.
So of course the Rabbi Willig actually likes to explain the he has these memories of his father's face turning bright red after he ate it, you know, just, I know this is one of the highlights of the Seder, right? But so the Seder, the Alta Seder, the Alta Seder, they've been eating horseradish now for hundreds of years. On the other hand, if you look at all the definitions of the Gemara and there's scientific questions on this. Archaeologically, right, how could they have even had this? How could they possibly have been talking about it? Right? Etc., etc. There are major issues using horseradish, but there is a very strong tradition among Ashkenazim, right, to eat horseradish as the choice of Maror. Looking at the Magen of Rum, but Tibol Rishon, you say Bari Pri Adama, Tzarech Ian, Yidon She'anu Nogum Likach Krain Lamar. So the Magen of Rum, that goes back a few years already, right? He was using Krain, he makes it very clear. And Kate Hei Mavarach Ma'o Bari Pri Adama. So it says in a lot of the Haggadahs, when you dip the karpas, you shav in mind, the Hadama covers the Marah. But wait a second, he said, what if you're in the Brachas being, you got Krain, what would the Bracha be? Right, so he says you're not going to be dumb on it. It's not a vegetable. Right, you're eating it in an abnormal way. Like the normal way to eat horseradish is out of a jar. That's how it's naturally grown. Right, you open the gold's jar, and there it is. That is a normal way. If you eat it that way, then it's shot to make a dumb. But if you eat it raw, who eats it? So therefore he says, why am I having in mind to be yotze with my hadama for the Marah, but I can't be yotze with it? It's not the right bracha. That's what the Magen Avraham says. He says, you know what? The way it works is really, it could be that you don't need to view it, right? Because it has to go motzi matzah maror. So there are many opinions to say it's part of the meal. You just made a motzi, right? So you don't bother with having in mind your hadama from beforehand, because it's not milav and not maror, but you don't need a bracha for a different reason. You can't go further. You see, no bracha, you make it. You don't have a bracha no more. Maybe a dying emes. What are you making?
Too late to say that.
That's right. Kaddish mo barabim beforehand. She ain't doch achol kamoshu. No one eats that. It's crazy, right? See that the im ain lo shai yirakos. Oh, mitchil bracha alachilas maravad. So the Magen Avraham takes issue with the idea, what they tell everybody in elementary school, that you have in mind when you say if you're using chrein, it's the wrong bracha. But we see two things from here. One thing we see is the Magen Avraham used chrein. That seems to be clear. Point number one. And point number two, he didn't seem to have a problem with it. He didn't say, since the bracha is not going to work, therefore I hereby implore upon you to use something else. That's not what he says. He said, we have to shatz up, we have to figure out how the brachas work. Tell brachas, Shaila. But he seemed to be okay. The Magen Avraham says, you know, we use chrein, and, you know, brachas on the brachas. At no point does he suggest, you know how we get out of the problem? We switch over to something else.
Would there have been something else?
So, I am not an expert in 17th century grocery stores. Therefore, I don't know what else was on the shelf. My understanding is probably a lot of potatoes, maybe some onions as well. But again, he, you might tell me the reason that he wasn't going to change is because this is the best he had. But he was still making an alachilas maror on it. Right? If the only thing that you have for maror is an apple, you know, so you can't use anything else, but you're still not going to make an alachilas maror on it. Right? So he doesn't start saying that, you know, I've got a problem with it because of that. He thought it was good enough. At least b'di'evit, you have to assume that he assumed it worked. Aruch HaShulchan, who a large part of selling his books was being explaining how all the menhagim are right, starts off with quoting our Mishnah, number 8, Shunul Chachom b'Mishnah, Eli Yuakim Shalom Yotze, Behem Yidei Chavosu b'Pesach, Chazeres, Tamcha, Chor Chavino, Ulshin, Baruch, Chazeres, Regidim, Lefarshu, Salata. What's the first one? That's lettuce, Salata. Again, lettuce, it's okay. But tamchum reyuv farshu chrein, or chrein, as we are fond of calling it. V'aruch etik ein pofonatzer, ranser, don't know what that is. V'yedati mahu, ze mi and aruch
farshu chrein. Maybe that's the horchon.
What?
Maybe that's the horchon.
Could be. Again, if you read this article in the Washington Post, it has to be an excellent article by Gil Marks, Alav Shalom. He does a very good job, you know, tracking these down and understanding the Latin names and where it comes from. V'chachavini yelo yadati, he says, mein esev mar. He goes through the whole list of what they are. Next one, Yud Gimel. Kol hashoni kodem mishra kodem asher shayachareh. Tells the halacha that you should try to follow the order, right? If you have all the maror's in the world, and you walk into the maror store and they said, how can we help you? It's been a good year for maror. We have imported, we have local, we have oitzer based in maror, whatever you want this year we can get for you. It's a good year for maror. So he says, obviously your first choice would be chazeres. Well, it's a mitzvah be chazeres. My chazeres chasa. So my chasa the chos rachmon alon. It's even a play on words. What's chasa? Akash Baruch Hu, he had mercy on us. Very nice. V'lachein afagav she'ein lo meriris mikol mokum hu yosef mitzvah. So he's the first one who points out, wait a second, that's not bitter. That's not bitter at all. Not a problem. Akash Baruch Hu made even that mar shouldn't be bitter. V'acharei tamcha. So this is the first mention that not everything's hunky-dory in romaine lettuce land. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's not a difference between sharp and bitter. It's a difference between gornish and gornish. What does lettuce taste like? Nothing, approximately. Yeah. So, you know, that's it's hard to imagine that that's exactly what we're talking about. So he gives a, he mentions it, but doesn't seem to be bothered. He says, however, he said the minhag in Europe is we don't use lettuce. Why? We don't have lettuce, right? He goes with the idea that what Chacham Tzvi postulated, or perhaps they don't have it. He said, yeah, we don't have it. In fact, that's what's going on here. Etc. So he goes on. He goes along with this. And says, you know, in fact, if we had our druthers, we would go with the romaine lettuce. But we don't have druthers. You know, we have what they what we can buy, and that's what we can buy. Therefore, that's what we use it. Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says, "Pirish mine asavim marim kuhu kai shim shenu yodim bir ezem l'shadenu." The Mishnah Berurah says, "No one's really sure what these things are at this point." So generally said that we just aim for bitter herbs. We assume that tamcha is chrein, b'shoneinu al chazeres kosev ha chalkas yakum. No, I don't think so. Came after. Got me on that one. V'chein chacham svishu masha karim shalatim. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah gives things, and again, the Mishnah Berurah makes it clear. We're in Radin, Chorin is what they had, and the reason they were doing it is because they were assuming that Chorin was Tamcha. So yeah, so these are the two choices, right? The number one choice would be the romaine lettuce. Romaine lettuce suffers from really two issues. Issue number one being it doesn't seem to be sap. Even the Chacham Tzvi said he had sap. We don't have sap in our romaine lettuce. That's A. And B is it's just not bitter. That's the problem with it. When it comes to the horseradish, we have a slew of problems, among them being that we're eating the root, it's not bitter, you can't eat a kazayas of it, etc., etc. So how do we deal with this? So first we'll talk a little bit about the issues of the romaine lettuce. So the Halicha Shlomo, it's a sefer they put together posthumously from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, of his different psukim from different places. And he refers here to the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was very bothered by the fact that the romaine lettuce was not bitter. However, people tell you that if you take the romaine lettuce and leave it out in the field too long, it turns bitter. So the Chazon Ish had a chumrah that he would dafka use the romaine lettuce that was out in the field too long. That's what he did. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach here in his piece writes why he disagrees with that. He thinks that you can eat fresh romaine lettuce even if it is not bitter yet. He thinks that romaine lettuce, that shouldn't be bothering you. That is his approach.
Maybe the fact that it doesn't have a taste at all makes it, by definition, bitter.
No, it has a little bit of taste. In fact, it's somewhat sweet.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of different lettuces out there.
What?
Again, there's an assumption that the original salata lituga, that is romaine lettuce. It's not foxy, it's not iceberg, that's what it is. It's interesting, I'll just digress for a moment. So the people who are the anti-horseradishers point to one of the, besides the fact that the horseradish has developed the strongest mesorah, right, among the Ashkenazim, there's also this issue of the chasim sofer. The Chasim Sofer at one point writes that one should not use romaine lettuce, he should rather use horseradish. Why?
Because of the insects.
Because of the insects. Because of the bugs. So I'm reminded many years ago, coming back from Yeshiva on Erev Pesach, and my mother gave me my jobs to do. So my job was to check the... That's what Yeshiva boys are good for. Sit there and check. So I went to the fridge and I... took out the lettuce and it was awful. This was a bad year. I remember finding 40 bugs. Really went over it. Finally spent the day, soaked it, did whatever I had to do. Had my lettuce checked it twice and put it away. And I went up to my room. I remember my mother calling, when are you going to clean the lettuce? I cleaned the lettuce already. She said, it's still here. I said, it's in plastic bags. So she said, no, it's not. So I came down and I said, look, here's the plastic bag. She said, that's not the mara, that's the lettuce for the salad. So my appetite for lettuce said, dropped off a little bit at that point. So, just saying. That's the issue. So again, if a person really would step back and look at the different possibilities here from a purely halachic point of view, based on all the sources that we've seen, one would say that if I could go into a store and buy any form of mara that I wanted, I would probably be inclined to buy lettuce. Right? Because lettuce has problems, but the problems seem to pale compared to the horseradish problems. Right? Right? I know I can eat a kazayas of lettuce. Right? I know, again, so it's not bitter, so that doesn't bother Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. It's good enough for him. It's good enough for me. Right? Right? It seems that, so there's no sap. All right. We believe in evolution. Right? Things change. How's that for a good quote for Yayu Torah? Right? Again, within a species, of course things change over time. So it lost its sap over the centuries? Big deal. Not a biggie. That would be our assumption, right? As opposed to horseradish, which just seems to be far off, right? Right? It really would seem that that probably is not what they were talking about. You know, for hundreds of years we thought that's what it was talking about, right? You really can't eat a kazayas of this stuff, right? It's, you know, it's a root which is clear in the Mishnah that's a problem. One would imagine you put this together, you would not be eating your horseradish. However, I quote this from one of the Rav Soloveitchik books in number 11, on the topic of theoretical and practical Torah transmission. So they quote the Rav as follows. There are two methods of Torah transmission. One is the theoretical halacha transmitted from the great Sanhedrin to the sages of Israel in the form of oral law translated into everyday life. The second method may be designated as practical transmission, which is entrusted to the community of Israel. The transmission is based on, so confused here, the verse Shalavicha V'yagevcha. When the Rav's great-grandfather of Yoshaber, that would be the Beis HaLevi, was asked what he thought of the attempt that was made of the Gershon Enoch Reino of Radzin, the Radzina, to restore the ritual of Tcheles for Tzitzis, he has answered that it is not part of the Mesorah of ask your father and he will relate to you. How do we know, asked the Rav, what color Yarok is? Is it green or is it yellow? Or what is the Chilazon? Or how do we know what is an answer? The answer is ask your father. What is Mara? We have a Masorah that is horseradish based on ask your father. The Chacham Tzvi followed the Masorah of Sephardic elders and maintained that Mara was lettuce. That was their ask your father Masorah. In a personal note, the Rav, should say, remarked that when his doctor forbade him to eat horseradish, he had to rely on the Kabbalah of the Sephardic elders. So the Rav was very clear that, you know, the Rav was a pretty open-minded guy, my understanding is, right? And as such, you know, he would readily accept all sorts of evidence, you would think. Still, he was of the opinion that horseradish is preferable, because at the end of the day, say what you want, that's what my father did, and his father, and then his father, going back as far as we know, that you can ask questions from today till tomorrow, but Mesorah trumps all the questions. Was good enough for the Alta Zeta, should be good enough for me as well. This question about when...
I disagree with that last comment most respectfully. If you bother what you quoted in the chapter Pesach and Lamed Tes, men's pass on the face in the Gemara, who came on top from the top four, who came from the left, where the Eliezer states the Amha Aretz, Jewish illiteracy, Maharsha, Lupa Lanach Roy,
We try not to knife out people. On Yom Kippur any day also. Just for the record. I don't know if they edit this, but they don't go on the record.
Are intergenerationally binding, and the mechanisms for their removal are...
Right, I think what you're saying is there's minog and there's minotos.
Right.
I understand. So we'll get to that. Okay, we'll get to that. Okay, right. I understand.
We now have a Messiah. Due to the scientific validation of Tcheles.
So again, Tcheles is for the time being, we're going to mention in general, right?
The issue. Because when it comes to the model,
we're going to the end of the
discussion. So this question, as you correctly point out, it's a question that really, right, here the Rav pointed out that Tcheles is this issue, right? The Rav quotes of his great-grandfather saying that, you know, you can choose that the Rezina, from today till tomorrow, you can give all the rayas in the world. You don't have a Masorah, it's gone. Certain things need a basic Masorah. It's interesting, they actually recently reprinted in the Sefer, the original tshuva of the Beis Halevi, he doesn't really say that. That's not what he seems to say, if you actually look at it. But that's the Masorah of what he said. It's even more important than what he said.
Right?
But this question really comes up in a lot of cases. For example, when it comes to Sifrei Torah, right? We all know the Aleppo Codex. And the Aleppo Codex is the oldest Masorah that we have of a Sefer Torah. There's a root, what?
There are several different
Masorahs. Right. So the Aleppo Codex is supposedly the codex that the Rambam himself used. What? Right. Keter Aram Soda, which what we have of it is in the Israel Museum and etc. Magically, more and more of it is popping up as the years go by. Right. It only begins, I think, in Parshas towards the end. Hazinu or so.
It was burned.
Right. It seems that it wasn't burned. That doesn't seem really to be true because pages are reappearing magically. It seems that it wasn't burned.
I thought part of it was burned, part of it was taken by Balabatri.
Right, so again, it seems more of the latter and less of the former. That's what it seems to be.
And also there was somebody that they right. independently compiled from the codex Casuto, a list of...
Right, Casuto, and went to 1943 when it was still whole. He went and he reviewed it and he made notes on it, which is very helpful as well. So the question is, you know, I'll give an example. So Ptua Daka. How do you spell the word
Aleph for Hay?
Aleph for Hay, right? So the Ashkenazim have one minhag, the Tamanim have another minhag, right? It happens to be that we don't have that part of the codex, but in the notes it talks about it, and it says that in fact they're right.
Which is it?
What? Aleph. So the question is, you know, do we go and so obviously our Masorah, you know, our Sifrei Torah, for centuries, have gone one way. All of a sudden, we have archaeological evidence that points the other way. Do we go and do we start changing things over this? Right. Many examples can be pointed to. A famous one is the issue of oats. The oats issue, which in fact is regaining prominence for a different reason now. Right? There was a fellow in Eretz Yisrael, Professor Yehuda Felix, whose epic word was Hachai Ve'et Sameach, the flora and fauna. He wrote about on Tanakh. He wrote about it in the Mishnah, where he goes about identifying what everything is. So we know that there's five minei dagon, right? There are five grains that if you make it into bread, you make a motzi or you make a mazonis on it, etc. And everybody knows from elementary school the five grains are wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. The problem is that the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that growing brachas. Says, well, wait a second. What about rice? You can make rice into flour, make some out of that. You know, so the Gemara seems to indicate when you add water to rice, there is a chemical reaction, sirchon, but it's not a strong enough reaction we call chimutz. The professor Felix went and he compared the reaction when you added the flour to the water to the rice flour to the reaction when you did it to the various other choices we had. And among the things he found out is that the reaction of oats is less than that of rice. However, there are other grains which have a greater reaction. And based on that, he wanted to replace oats on the list of the Chamishas Mina Dagon with a different choice. Now, that is somewhat important. Those who are Makmitav Cheerios every morning, what bracha do you make on it? That's a major question. But more so nowadays, many people are celiac. So you are chayv in the mitzvah matzah. What are you going to do? So they have gluten-free matzah. Lots of gluten matzah. That's easy to get. Strites. Just gluten-free matzah. That's where the trick kind of kicks in. So they use oats for that. Right? There are certain oats are certain strands are gluten-free. They use that. In the event that oats are not one of the chamishas mine dagon, you can't be yotzei with that. Right, so now that there's a greater focus on gluten-free, again, you want to, so here's the question. Everybody knows, for years and years and years, we have this Masorah, and the Masorah says that this is the Chamishas Mine Dagon, and now, all of a sudden, right, a scientist comes along and says, right, or in the case of our Sefer Torah, we've been writing our Sefer Torah so one way all these years, archaeologically, you find some evidence that says, you know, not that way. So to what extent do we follow Masorah in this case, and to what extent do we follow what the evidence is? So as we saw from the last marker, Rav Soloveitchik was pretty clear that he was a Masorah man. And you know, you can ask your questions, we can leave them at Tzarach Ian, but we're not changing what we're doing. Rav Shechter doesn't agree with that at all. Interesting, Rav Shechter, based on the Gemara in number 12, Baba Basra, it's a fascinating Gemara, that's a good read, that's for sure. He says as follows, he tells the story about Rav Bar Bar Chana. The Rav Bar Chana runs into this tour guide, the best tour guide ever. He takes him to see all these fascinating places. He takes him to see the place where the ground swallowed up Korach. Takes him to see Har Sinai. He takes him to see the Mesei Midbar. So in this Gemara, he's talking about the Mesei Midbar. So he's explaining that he went to see the Mesei Midbar, and the people were huge. He said that one of them was lying there with his knee in the air, with his foot back, knee up. He said a person was able to drive right under it on his horse with his spear high in the air without touching the top of bottom of the knee. So among the things he did is he went and he saw their tzitzis. And he decided he was going to take one of the corners of the tzitzis back to show everybody. So he went, he takes off one of the corners, and suddenly they can't move anymore. So the tour guide says, they said, what's going on? I said, did someone take something? He said, yeah, I took this. He said, put it back, or else we're not going to be able to go. He goes back to the base medrash, and he says, you're not going to believe this. I had the best trip ever. And they said, really? So the Mesei Midbar? What did their tzitzis look like? He said, I wanted to bring one back. I couldn't. He said, well, just look at it. It was like Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Was it three strings doubled over? Or was it four strings doubled over? He said, I forgot to count. He said, well, Nardu Bist. What type of fool are you? How come you didn't tell us? So Shatta says, there seems to be a pretty strong raya from this, that had he come back with a report that the Mesei Midbar wore this type of tzitzis, even if it wasn't the type of tzitzis everyone else was wearing, they would have switched. So Shatta says, that seems to be a raya brura. Not like what the Rav says. He sees it as a raya brura that, in fact, that indicates that archaeological evidence could trap Masorah. Even though for hundreds of years we've been wearing our tzitzis like this psak, if you can show me that the Mesei Midbar wore their tzitzis another way, that's Rav Shechter's major Gemara that points in this direction. Chaim Kanievsky, in his Perush on the Chumash, Time of the Krah, brings us that, but he reads everything in a very different way. So he says as follows. He quotes the Gemara in Baba Basra. So he says, Umashim be'emes minao mimenu min ha-shamayim ha-kachas misham keren levara halacha. He says, think about it. How many miracles happen in the story? Right? First he grabs a corner, and then he can't move. Clearly miraculous. He puts it back, he can move. Then he gets back, and they say to him, "Did you? No, I forgot." Rabbi Bar Chana was probably a pretty bright guy. I didn't know him personally, but you know, based on what I've read about him, he seems to be a pretty bright guy. He probably could have figured out that counting would have been enough. But for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned around and said, made him not count, not even think about this most basic idea.
Right.
So again, it's not Tisha B'Av time, but so. So what's Pshat? So Chaim Kanievsky says, you see from the exact opposite. You see, right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want this to happen. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu went out of his way to make sure that they wouldn't use archaeological evidence to be Mevarer and against the Masorah. So he reads the Gemara the exact opposite of Rav Shechter. You're right. Had he brought it in, they would have done it, but they would have been wrong. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure it didn't happen. So that is the thing. Rav Shechter has a nice piece in this in his introduction to the Nefesh HaRav from number 14. It's a little late. Everyone's welcome to look at it on their own. But again, this is a wide-reaching shaila that comes out in the case of what do you do in Masorah versus science. He puts it in an interesting way. I've heard him say this personally. The question is, so there's a discussion in Brachos, what is Orez? We talk about Orez. We have translated it as rice. Right? Tosfos doesn't translate. Tosfos translates it as millet. Right? So there's a machlokes rishonim. We, of course, have always followed the idea that orez is rice. We make a mezonos on it. We make a bar and a fashos afterwards. Whatever the Gemara says, we do that for rice. So Rav Shechter says as follows. He says, why do we assume that orez is rice? Do we assume orez is rice because my father assumed it was rice and his father assumed it was rice, etc.? Or because if I walk into the bodega and I say, I'd like some arroz, they're going to give me rice. Right? That linguistically, right, many languages refer to rice as arroz, which is, sounds an awful lot like orez. So that's the question. What really matters? In Rav Shechter's mind, what matters is what you call it, and in the matters based on, you know, what the evidence is, as opposed to the rav. It was not good. Might have gone to the bodega, maybe didn't go to bodega. I can either confirm or deny, but that wouldn't have moved him one way or the other. It's very interesting in terms of this. I'll tell you a personal story that some people might know. This goes back probably almost 10 years ago. Around this time of year, I was giving a lecture on a Sunday morning in Chicago. So I got up, I caught the 6:15 flight, I think out of Newark it was. You land at around 7:15 in Chicago because you pick up the hour going backwards. From there, someone picked me up. I davened at 8 o'clock Shachris, and I was speaking at 9:30. And I was going to fly back afterwards. So after Shachris, someone came over to me and said, you know, anything we can do for you? I said, yeah, can you drive me to Bagel Country because I'm starved? I had to get up New York time at 4 in the morning to make it to the airport. I couldn't eat before Shachris. Right? And now, and for me, now it's already 10 o'clock, and then I'm going to give a drasha, and then I'm going to go back. I'm really hungry. You think I'd really appreciate a ride to Bagel Country? To which the guy said, come with my house, I'll make you an omelet. That works also. Fine. All the same. So I'm sitting in this guy's house, and he says, I want you to try something. And he walks back, and he comes, and he hands me some leaf. I said, what is it? He said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, so I'm not going to eat it. He said, just eat it. I said, no, I'm not going to just eat it. What is it? I'll tell you afterwards. So what brought it? Hadama. So I eat it. It's some sort of leaf, and it does taste bad. As I'm chewing it, something starts turning bitter in my mouth. So what's that? He said, that's horseradish leaves. So we think of horseradishes as these white things, but lemaisa, they're like carrots, but they're white. Right? And their leaves will come afterwards, and they chop off the leaves, and they throw them out, and they just keep that. He said, if you look at the leaves, they really fit into a lot of what the Gemara says. Right? They act, A, they're leaves. That's a biggie. Right? They're these very large leaves on top. And in fact, it's the only thing that's ever happened to me. When you chew it, it's really not bad at the beginning, and as the Gemara said, it turns bitter in your mouth. Bitter, sharp, whatever it is. So I said, this is fascinating. I said, can I have some to take with me? He gave me a Ziploc bag. You know, no one... I figured this is something you don't want to get stuck with by security. But, you know, I made it back, etc. And I fed these leaves to various senior Rashi Yeshiva here in YU. So I gave it to Rabbi Bleich. We thought this was the greatest thing ever. And Ad HaYom HaZeh, this guy in Chicago, every year grows... His name is Dr. Joe Gluck, if anyone wants to track him down. Grows horseradish leaves... And he FedExes it on 2 days before Pesach to me. I take half of it, I drive down to the Upper East Side and give it to Rabbi Bleich. And that's what we use every year. I went to Rav Schachter and I said, try this. He said, no. So why not? So he said, I'm just not impressed. I said, why not? So he said that the bottom line is, let's say you're right. Let's say basically you prove that this is Tamcha, but that's down the list. I'm eating Chasa, I have Chazaris. But I was number one on the list. So congratulations, you found the number two, number three on the list. That doesn't do it for me one way or the other. Rabbi Willig was more open-minded to it, and he said, if you have extras, I'll take it. So if we do it, that's what happens, in fact, in regularly.
But the leaves from the horseradish, I think, do have sap in them.
Right. The leaves from the horseradish really seem to be what's going on. So in fact, what I did at the time, I figured, well, this is great. What does Gold's do with all their horseradish leaves? So I called them up, right? Had the little bell. So I called them. I said, you know, so I said to the guy, what do you do with your horseradish leaves? He said, I throw them out. I said, can I have them? He says, as much as you want. Bring an 18-wheeler truck. I'll fill up the whole bag for you. You know, you don't know how much of the stuff I got to get rid of. The problem is that they don't harvest horseradish throughout the year. They harvest horseradish only Sukkot time.
Freeze it.
That's a process. I had an Eitza. I went online and I found an Australian horseradish grower. I figured if they're growing it, he's got to be eating on Pesach. So I emailed this guy, and for some reason he never responded. He followed because he wouldn't take me seriously. But this fellow, Dr. Joe Gluck, is kind enough to grow it. He grows it in an Otzitz Nukov on the cement. And to the extent, depending on how bad the winter is, you know, he tries to grow it outside. If not, he grows it inside in a way that it's considered to be growing from the ground, and that is what we are wont to use in the Rav family for our Marah. It's the later the Pesach, the better you do.
The fact that it didn't happen in those days in the Mishnah.
Okay, that's a shiloh. Again, either way, we're going to have problems, but this takes care of a lot of the shilohs. Again, if you want to stick with the Mesorah, right, you're doing a lot better with this. Yes?
Was this
the
Mesorah?
No, this is his own Eitzah.
About free.
Kishi Kirsi's a dentist. He's not a botanist.
What?
No, again, he keeps it. He's as good as Bodek. I've never found anything in his. The question in general, just to end up focusing on the bigger question, the idea of scientific evidence versus Mesorah, there are a few sources out there. The Smag, which is actually quoted by Rav Shechter, we put it separately at number 15, tells us an interesting story. He's talking about Rashi Tfilin versus Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin, so the minhag is to follow Rabbeinu Shlomo, Rashi. The Rambam also, the Gam Shomchu Kosam Eretz Yisrael Shenafla Bima Shal Kever Yecheskel, that there was some issue that there was a bima on top of a stage on top of the Kever Yecheskel Navi, and it collapsed. Umatu Shom Tefillin Yishanim, and then they found Tefillin there. Right, Yishanim Maod Kisidra Rabbeinu Moshe VeRashi, and those oldest Tefillin they found, they opened them up, and they were Rashi Tefillin. So the Smag wants to bring this as a raya, in fact, that is the proper way of writing your tefillin. If you look at the Drisha, he quotes it and he points out, yeah, that's great. Why do you think they were in Seamus? Where did you find them? an interesting raya. So again, that's not the strongest raya, the truth of the matter is, right? Because you put something in Seamus when you didn't accidentally write your tefillin in the wrong way. Right, the Seder Arpashias, that's hard to imagine. But on the one hand, he's making a good point. When it comes to archaeological evidence, you got to be careful how you interpret it. So, for example, in the famous Dr. Felix Oates issue, many other scientists have done subsequent tests and found different results. So that's one point, is you have to be very careful with that.
After
that's one
problem. Let's talk about the experiment.
Yeah.
That you can't replicate what they had in the Gemara because of different atmospheric conditions. The spores in the atmosphere make a difference, so
you can't really
prove anything. You did today, what you do today, based on what you did today.
Right, I guess. So the people that my understanding, again, probably shouldn't be quoting him in this one, but Rabbi Shechter at one point was more concerned about the oats than he is now. I think as the follow-up studies came out, he became less concerned about that maybe oats are not from the Chamishas Minadagan. The other point that is actually from this past week's Parsha, so Masis HaShekel. So the Ramban has a little piece where there's a discussion as to how big a Masis HaShekel is in his modern-day measurements. And he said he was in Eretz Yisrael, and guess what he found? He found a coin. So there was a kuti there, and he showed the coin to the kuti, and the kuti said, oh, this says Masis HaShekel on it. And he weighed it, and in fact, it was like one opinion, not the other opinion. Rashi was right, not the other opinion. That's what he writes here in number 17. There are two issues that people take with this Ramban. First is the Abarbanel, where he says that how do you read your data is a big deal. Right, he said, for example, we know that over time, coins lose their weight. So one opinion is 12, the other opinion is 10. You weighed it, you were 10, great. But how old is this Chatzi Shekel? It could be that it was 12. Right? You've got to be, again, very careful in how you interpret your data. Yes?
They don't lose weight spontaneously. I mean, people just weigh it. They worn off.
Or it wears off. Right?
Yeah, but if you look at the coin and you see it's not worn, then you can assume it has the original weight.
Okay. Again, this was the issue of Barbadel, and the Tash Bates brings up another issue. The Tash Bates, in number 19, says he's got an issue. Is how do you know this is a Masis Shekel? You couldn't read it. You took it to a kuti, and he read it for you. You're going to trust the kuti for your Masara? Who knows if he's telling the truth? So again, the famous story of the Tcheles. Going back to this Meshetayah, so the original Tcheles was the Redzina Tcheles. The Redzina Tcheles, he was assuming that it was the cuttlefish or some sort of octopus that shoots off an ink, but the ink was the wrong color. So he went and he took it to a scientist, and the scientist showed him that if you add iron to it, and then you heat it up, it turns blue. And that's what this Misora is. Now, the scientists would seem, you know, sold them a bill of goods. Because if I take orange juice and I add iron to it, it also turns blue. It's not the ink that turns the blue, it's the iron that turns Prussian blue, right? The problem is that there was an unscrupulous scientist that was behind it, and that's what happened. Right, so too, he says, you're going to rely on the Kuti? You got to be very careful as well when you're going with scientific evidence. Where is your evidence coming from? So again, there is a general machlokas in terms of to what extent do we accept scientific evidence versus the Masorah. Rav Schechter is open to the idea. It seems that the Rav was less open to the idea. In general, however, we have to be very careful when we do it. One is because interpretation, science changes. Oftentimes, what science thinks is fact one day, once theories come and go, and you got to be careful with that. You got to be careful with interpretation. You also have to be careful with where the information is coming from. Thank you. I think it's time.